problems never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close, closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream of the day when it comes around and it's taken away. Leaves me with the feeling that I feel the most. Feel it come to life when I see your ghost.
Listening to the Serious Nursing Podcast, brought to you by the Raw, Live, and Unedited Podcast Network. I, of course, am your host, Serious Nerd himself, Ayo, Mr. Big Geek. And I got some drama in a lot of these books for you. Hopefully I can get through them. There's a total of about 8 books I want to review. I know I'm not going to get to do them all, but yeah, I might quick hit a couple of those. But the ones I feel you should really get into are the ones I'm going to get in depth when it comes to reviewing. Let's start off with Aftershock Comics Join the Future Issue 2. Now, if you remember, I want to say back in Serious Nerd Shit episode, wow, it's a while ago, maybe 5 or 6. It's before COVID hit. They dropped this issue about like a Wild West and like the future kind of thing, right? It was a pretty dope concept. The first issue came out with a bang, and I loved it. I'm like, oh shit, can't wait for the next one. COVID hit, fucking 4 or 5 months later, here we are at issue 2. But they're gonna drop them quick. I think they had issue 2 and issue 3 like ready. Let's start off with issue 2. Join the Future issue 2. This is written by Zach Kaplan, and the artist is Pietro Kowalski. Issue 2, titled Tracking Game. If you remember the end of that book, if you followed that episode of Serious Nerd, if you went to pick up the book yourself, we ended with the town, that little western town, getting raided by like what were they like? I don't want to call them robots. They're just futuristic. They're people with futuristic weapons, you know, lasers and shit. So, and this is a town still battling with, like, handguns. They stood no fucking chance. And at the end of that, we get our, I forgot her name, but, like, her whole family was slaughtered. Her name's Clem. Clemency? But they call her Clem. And I think the one person she was trying to save, because her pops was holding the fort down, it was her little brother who got shot in the back, and as he fell, took another one to the head. It was pretty fucking graphic. So we continue there with the dad still trying to hold him off, and he's yelling at her, you know, he's gone. Let him go. Run. And as she starts to take off, he holds her back and goes, wait, they're coming around the forest. Because this town, this is set in the future where they got the city called the Citadel, maybe, I think it's called, right? Or the one city is called something like that. Citadel is probably fresh in my head because I just watched Mad Max again. You know how that shit is. Well, they try to have these people sign over, you know, so they can terraform their territory and build more of the city there. If you remember with terraforming, if you remember Superman, Man of Steel, which is my favorite DC movie right now, then The Dark Knight. Is it The Return? No, The Dark Knight. Anyways. Terraforming is when they tear something down and rebuild from the ashes kind of thing, right? They change the whole landscape to build on top of it. So that's what they're trying to do. The people in this town didn't want nothing to do with it. They're like, hey, we live this peaceful life that they lived hundreds of years ago. You guys continue your ways, we'll continue our ways. Well, the person who's trying to build more for the future didn't like that, so he sends his assassins and his goons, and this is where we're at now. So Clem's dad runs up to catch her before she takes off and says, hey, you know what to do. Run to the middle of the forest. There's someone out there that I think will protect us. And she goes, no matter what you hear, no matter what you see, just keep running. Clem takes off. And as she starts running, she hears someone yell, William Levy, who's the dad's name. And it's, go on and face me. And this is the guy who was trying to get the dad to sell, right? But, he's part of that future town. And they're paying him to just take people out. The dad knew who it was real quick, so as soon as he turned around, he started shooting. Clem starts in her track to see what's going on, going down. She thought, you know, her dad had like this guy. He let off his shots first, and it looked like he had the dude. But this guy who's like a sheriff, he's from the future, like I said, the future city, and he has future weapons. One of them being a fucking force field. The bullets. Flies off the force field and flies away while the sheriff fucking unloads these laser shots to the dad, taking him down in a couple shots. Clem sees her dad murdered by the sheriff. Sheriff takes a look, sees her running. It's too late. He ain't going to be able to catch her. So he starts shooting in her direction. Doesn't get any hits. He just starts backing up towards the town. Once Clem gets to a high point of the forest, she climbs one of the biggest trees and she looks down at her town, which is being burnt the fuck down. We get a big old splash page. Join the future. This happens in Midwest, USA. It's probably the next day we see Clem walking through the town. Everyone's fucking dead. Everyone has holes in them. Like, if imagine getting shot with a laser to get this burn mark. It's not bullet holes, it's like burn mark. She's walking through the people she grew up with, and tears are going through her eyes. And as she gets closer to the middle of town where the church once stood, there's a portable TV that floats. It's from the town. The name of the city is actually called Future. That's what it's called. And it's showing people. It's playing right in the middle of this fucking massacre. She rolls up on it, fucking eyes teary. She looks at this fucking thing and just turns away. Next page, we see her getting some holes ready for her dad and her brother. She digs them up. She puts them in the grave. Before she buries her dad, she unclips his gun belt, puts it on her waist, clips it on, takes her brother's hat. Now she's wearing that. And as she's burying them, you can see the city Future in the background. We get her roving over to the next town over when she sees a lot of people doing the same thing, trying to get out of the way. And she notices one of her dad's friends. And she's asking, what are you guys doing? Why don't you guys come to help? And the friend says, well, we had to protect our own town. Did anybody survive? She goes, no, everyone's dead. And he and the wife offers her, come with us. Come with us to the future. You know, I'm sorry about your pa. I'm sorry about your brother. But you can live on. You're going to keep their legacy alive. And she's like, if I do that, if I join the city, then they died for nothing. You know, I'm not going to go join them. I'm going to kill them. And she goes, where can I get weapons? And he pretty much said, well, the owner of the, you know, everyone who owned the local store, like a grocery store, the local mill, weapons, whatever. They've been selling their shit. There's probably nothing left. So just try and see. If not, there's somebody in her woods her dad knew. And she goes, yeah, I remember. I just know how to find them. And she says, well, you know, just keep going. He'll find you. And she starts leaving the town behind as the people are starting to pack up. The terraform machines come in, and these things are fucking huge, man. They're like, god damn it, they're as big as, when you see the terraformers on top of the town, it swallows like the whole town. It burns it all down and it starts working to the soil, right? And there's about three of them on the land now taking care of everything. And she starts talking to herself as she looks down at this her town, which has been destroyed, burnt, getting even more fucked up. She goes, I promise I'll kill them. And she walks back into the forest. We get a panel of the guy, one of the mayors of the future city, and he's talking to the sheriff who took down Clem's dad and telling him, were there any survivors? They go, yeah, one, the teenage girl was still missing. He's all, we can't let her go. She's seen too much. We got to find her. Send in, like, the drones and the hounds. If you remember that first book, now it's starting to hit, come back to me. Her and her brother ran into wolves in the woods when they're out there hunting. And the wolves were robotic and shit. They're like sentient. It's crazy. They're like cyborg wolves and shit, right? But they look like regular animals. I guess they keep track of what's out in the woods for whoever's in charge of them in the city. So as he tells the sheriff, we must find the girl. Drones, they just disperse into the forest. There's about five of them, and they start roaming the area, right? And they're scanning everything. They find a horse by itself, and they take off next to the horse. The horse is tied up to a tree next by this little pond. And this pond, you see like a stick, like a straw sticking out. That's where Clem was hiding. She comes out of the water, cold as fuck. She's, I don't know what to do, but I gotta try and find some way to get warm. And she notices the horse start to buckle a little bit. And she looks around. She goes, what is it? Take it easy. And it starts buckling a little bit more. She pulls the gun, turns around. And she doesn't see anything, but she starts shooting. One of the wolves comes out from it, from where she was at. And I thought right away, oh, shit, it's the cyber wolves. I didn't think they attacked. I thought they just scared whoever was around. As she tries to protect herself, the wolves got, like, a bead on her. So it jumps at her neck and, like, rips at her shoulder. She falls down. As the wolf has a handle on her, like, looks like it's going to kill her, like four baby wolves come out from the brushes. I'm like, oh, this is a real wolf right here trying to hunt for his kids. And after the wolf, I'm like, it's over for her. There's a laser shot that comes by the wolf's ear and takes out a tree next to it. There we see a man standing with a shotgun laser kind of thing and says, get, go on, get. You know how they talk back in the day. The wolves take off, leaving Clem bloody and confused. And he's like, don't you know it's dangerous out there? And then she starts laughing. He's like, why are you laughing? He's like, I told him I found you. They told me I wouldn't, but I told him I find you. She passes out as the stranger walks over her in the shadow. That's the end of issue two. I'm sticking with this fucking book. It was badass. So like I said, it started with the bang issue one. I didn't want to really go into depth into this, but this is one you should be reading from Aftershocks. It's something totally different from the hero genre. If you're not used to jumping into other shit, this is the old Western future shit, but they're mixing it pretty good. So I recommend it. And issue three should be ready to review by the next episode of Serious Nerd Shit. So let's see if that happens. All right, next books we got on here from DC Comics, Batman Secret Files. There's like four Batman books that came out this week. One of them was the Joker 80th anniversary. I picked up, of course, two copies. I love two of the different covers, so I got two different variants. Batman 92 comes out. If you're reading that, that's heading into the Joker War. Joker War starts in 93, but this is like you met the designer. You met Joker's new girlfriend. What was her name? God damn it. Punchline, right? I'll talk a little bit into that a little bit later. And then there's another Batman book, Batman The Adventures Continue, and I'll quick hit that later on. But right now, let's jump into Batman Secret Files, The Deadliest Assassins in the World. So this, if you're a fan of the Secret Files books, I mean, they did one for Suicide Squad, which is pretty fucking cool. Matter of fact, it's so good. I think the print on that, it was a low print run, I think, and right now it's worth a lot of fucking money. I mean, you could buy the trade, but if you find the books and singles, get them. You know, it's a good fucking read, and they're pretty pricey. And those came out, fuck, I want to say like, shit, 7 years ago maybe? What are we, 20? Yeah, something like that. Maybe 5 years ago. So they started Secret Files with Batman. This is issue three. And it talks about the deadliest assassins. And there's five stories on five different assassins starting from, what is her name? She's fucking badass. Let's see. She's young. She reminds me. Anyway, so we get Batman running into assassins. She was sent to hire or to kill like the mayor. Batman catches her mid-assassination and starts to fight her. And he tells her, you know, hey, you remind me, like, he's talking to himself while he's fighting her, you know, everything she does reminds him of Jason Todd. And he's so, you know, he's always trying to fix that the ones who can't be fixed, right? And he thinks he can get to her. In the middle of the fight, she tells him a secret that catches him off guard. And then she drops another spoiler on him, another secret on him that takes him out. This first, you're going to get introduced to this Deadshot. Fuck, I forgot this girl's name, man. She's a pretty badass assassin. I had other names. Hold on real quick. All right, Shazier. That's her name, Shazier, right? Trained by the League of Assassins. She's one of those badass bitches, right? Anyway, that story with them two is fucking good. After you're done reading that, it ties into another one. That one's actually called Don't Hold Your Breath, which is it. That's written by Vita Ayala and the artist Andy Tung. Ain't never heard of him, but I love the art in this book. So the next assassin we spent. So pretty much this book breaks down. You're dealing with these five assassins, and there's a story about each one. The next one, I'm not gonna spoil all of them. They're all fucking good reads. I'm gonna just read off, I think, which the ones that are the best. The second one, he gets into it with Malcolm Merlyn. Now, if you remember the Green Arrow show, Malcolm Merlyn was a big fucking a big villain in the Arrowverse, right? Well, I guess he's just as bad as, he's better than he was in the comics than he was in the show, if you guys remember that. And he's out hunting Batman or trying to lure him into a trap. And Batman, before he fights him, he knows Merlin's there hunting for him. He gets word through his sources, right? And he gets a hold of Arrow and says, how do I deal with him? He says, hey, well, he's going to try to lure you into a trap. And after that, it's anyone's guess. But be careful, because he sometimes, on his best day, he can be a better Bowman than me. So Batman takes that into consideration, finds a trap, springs it, and the shit goes down. I never really thought of this character as someone Batman or anyone in the DCU should be not only afraid of, but take seriously, right? This story proved me fucking wrong, because this motherfucker is a bad motherfucker. He's, holy shit, forget the guy we saw on TV, right? This motherfucker, not only is he a hell of a marksman, he's a fucking killer. And he'll go to any lengths to get what he wants. So him and Batman go at it. The stories, like, all these stories are like anywhere from 6 to 10 pages. This is a big, pretty thick book. I think it was like at retail at $4.99. So, you know, you're getting something bigger than usual. 30-page book. So they go at it. It's a good fucking story. I'm not going to tell you how it ends. Just, wow. Right? Second story involves another assassin. What was his name? Mr. Teeth. I've never heard of this fucking villain. Never. He looks like something straight out of a horror fucking movie. He's a psychotic killer, of course. His teeth, his grill's all out. His lips are like pinned back where you can see his teeth. Batman finds him in the middle of murdering someone or trying to murder someone. They go into it. It's a pretty fucking creepy story. It's called Muted. That's written by Mariko Tamaka, and artist is Riley Rosmo. Pretty fucking cool too, right? I didn't get to read off the Merlin one, did I? I thought I did. The artist in the Merlin story was fucking dope, dude. Let's see if I can get that to you. I guess they didn't drop it on us. Okay, here we go. The writer for that one is Philip Kennedy, and the artist is Victor Ibanez. Never heard of that guy. I love his fucking art. The fourth story we get after the Mr. Teeth is some guy that reminds me of Jack Flag, if you know that character from Marvel Comics. What is this motherfucker's name? He's another hired assassin, former U.S. Marine or SEAL, I don't know what the fuck he is. This story is pretty fucking cool. His name's Gunsmith. So if you remember that name, let it burn into your mind and boom. Then we get the fifth story, which ties directly into what's going on in the Batman books now. This one's called Fool's Gold. It's written by James Tynan, who's writing the Batman books right now. And the artist is Sumit Kumar. And it's a Deathstroke, the deadliest assassin, right? And they're in the middle of a fight. If you've been reading that book, they've been fighting over and over. And after the panel, after you start going through the panels of them battling out, they're fucking killing each other. You cut back to a month prior where Deathstroke gets interrupted while he's working out by Joker, a couple of Joker's goons, and Punchline. Now, they're trying to buy him off to, you know, if the Joker war is going to start, Joker needs somebody to help soften Batman. That's the way I'm going to put it. To help soften him up, right? Before he goes in for the big kill. Him and Joker are going back and forth, you know. He never really works good. He doesn't go with them. He doesn't trust them. All this aside, he still does it for the fucking money. Or you think he does, right? Punchline's there to try to sway them a little more. Him and Joker have a back and forth. Like I said, if you're reading the Batman books, the main title, this ties into that. You're going to want to pick up this book just for that. Go back to where him and Batman are fucking fighting. And was something let out here? No, Joker tells him something that should tie in to the Joker War, which now that I read the first book of that makes more sense. But it tells you at the end of that book, after Batman takes down Slade, you know, to be continuing Joker War starting Batman 95. And that's exactly what this ties into, that last story. Any Batman, anybody who's reading Batman right now, this is a must for you, right? People who just like these short stories involving the characters they don't really know, the Shazier one was fucking awesome, and so was the Malcolm Merlin one. Like, changed my mind on the motherfucker. That's how dope that story was. So, just being a comic book fan, this Batman Secret Files, pretty fucking dope. I recommend it. Okay, now here's one who's been causing a lot of buzz, and I've recommended to people, and they've been loving it. We got issue 3 of IDW's Wellington. This is from the creator of the Lore podcast, Aaron Mankey, right? I think he's not really writing the book, he's just behind it. The story's his, but the writer is actually Delilah Dawson. And then we get the art from Pierre Kowalski. Is he the same dude that's doing? Oh, yeah, he's the same dude that's doing Once Join the Future. huh, that's why his shit looked familiar. All right, cool. Dope. So if you remember last time, we read issue 2 of Wellington, which is the last series, Nerd Shack. I think I've read each issue the last couple of episodes. We get Wellington. He's investigating the murder of this man that had all these markings, all this ritual shit on him. That's the disappearance of a kid. And what are some those three things? And then the appearance of this black dog slash wolf creature, right? Whatever you want to call it. And then at the end of the book, if you remember, he gets visited by this lady, this crazy, she looks like a cat, half wolf lady, blacking eyes. And they get interrupted by the keeper who's watching, who's helping Wellington stay there while they investigate the thing. Let me just read it, the what happened in recent events. Okay, so after receiving the letter, this is going to tie into issue 1 and 2, from an old flame, the Duke of Wellington heads to the countryside to investigate a series of disturbing crimes. A mysterious murder, a missing child, and a vicious black dog roaming the countryside. See, they keep calling that motherfucker a dog. Anyways, after an encounter with said black dog, a witch named Altsela tells the Duke that the devil himself has crawled out of hell and they need to stop him. Initially writing her off as a crazy old woman, the Duke has a change of heart after a dark nightmare of a headless man and an encounter with a supernatural woman in a barn where the dead body is being held. Remember that last issue, he had that dream and that corpse was talking to him about all the dark shit that's coming. That's when we got the witch that showed up, like, hey, the devil's coming to get you, or he's out. And then that's when we're introduced to the girl at the end of the story, that she's some kind of supernatural creature too. Well, they get interrupted by the innkeeper. They bring her in the house. Now they're having to sit down about what's been going on. Wellington doesn't really understand. He's just getting into this occult shit, right? He's heard all the stories, but he doesn't really believe it. But he wants to take the witch and the girl. What is her name? She has a name. Let's see. Because he introduces her as her goddaughter. But does she have a name? Sorry, guys. I know this isn't how you... we don't have... God damn it. It said her name, but I don't know where the fuck's that now. Anyways. Okay, sorry about that. They go into the cave that Wellington was at in issue 1, where he was first looking for the dog, where he actually ran into it, him and his horse, and he took a swipe at it with his sword, right? Shot at it, too. They go back to that door to the entrance of the cave, and there's a padlock on it. He's like, well, that's interesting. And before they do that, the lady's all, maybe we should just think about this for a while. This is a witch. She senses something there. And he shoots the door. They open it, and she's like, well, it's too late. She goes, huh. Both of you guys should stay here where it's safe. Let me investigate. And Duke's like, nah, you know, he's a gentleman. He's an English gentleman. He's like, bloody hell. Like, I'm not going to let this, you know, I'm going to go in before the women. So he's all, well, I understand that you're afraid of certain things in here. Just let me see shit from my own eyes and let me go with you. The three of them go in. As they walk by the door, there's like some kind of written language. Like it's like in, it's like glowing in the dark and green. The girl, who's like a supernatural creature, sees it. She rubs her hand on it and it passes by. This leads me to believe she has something to do with this or knows more than she's saying, right? Anyway, so just remember, Wellington still is telling the story about his life to the guy we met. I think he's a reporter, right, in book 1. So they get to the part where the cave where Wellington had the dream with the corpse, and there's that satanic. It's a summoning circle is what the witch found out it was. And she goes, now I know what happened. Now everything makes sense. She goes, this wasn't, you know, meant for just summoning. This was meant to negotiate. The first thing first, and you guys have to understand this, that the guy that was murdered, he was attempting to summon a demon and have a bargain with it, right? His wife had died in childbirth along with the child, and he wanted them back. And Wellington's like, well, what's summoning a demon going to do? He goes, oh, well, you don't see, don't you? This is a trade. That's where the other life was came in. And Wellington thinks about it. He goes, the child. The child was the sacrifice. And she goes, yes. She goes, there's darker things in here than you understand. And while they're in this midst of this conversation, there's a fucking growl behind them. They all look at each other. They turn around slowly. There's a fucking wolf. Man, look at this thing. It's a fucking wolf, man. I don't know how they keep calling it a dog. That shit is a wolf. I don't give a fuck. Anyways, Well, attends days, he gets in front of the ladies. He goes, ladies, I beg for you to flee. And they say, no, the witch takes out like this fucking pocket knife. And the supernatural looking she-cat thing gets her claws out. Her teeth are sharp as fuck. She's getting ready to fight. And then Wellington starts cursing at the wolf. You know, come beast, come at me. Or, you know, feel my hot iron. You know, this motherfucker back in the day. He takes a swing at it and it goes through the dog. But he slices at his face and he's all, well, what the hell kind of shit is this? And then the witch yells out, demons don't play fair. And it lounges at the witch, the wolf does. And it takes a slash at her, but before it gets close, Wellington takes another slash, and the wolf howls. It slashes it right. He slashed it right from, like, the top of the right eye down across the nose, or his, it's not really a nose, right? Like, his mouth and nose area, right? The dog growls, the wolf growls, backs off slowly until the darkness disappears into a cave. And they're like, well, let's follow it. And they go, no, it's fucking night. It's nighttime. The witch tells them, like, we're in its element. Let's wait till daybreak. Let's gather more people. We'll come back. He's like, that's what you suggest, then let's do that. They go back to the house, and they start telling the people their findings. You know, hey, this happened, and this and this. And she goes, hey, something strange happened over here. They go, what? And they go, while you guys were out, your man, who's his right-side man, what's the dude's name? Motherfucker. Give me one. No, that's not his name. Give me one sec. I'll find his goddamn bastard's name. Fitz. That's his name, Fitz. She's telling him there was a problem. You know, he came in. He was kind of hurt, so she took care of him the best she could and laid him down to rest. Wellington goes, oh, well, I need to check in on my man, Fitz. You know, that's his right-hand dude. So he goes in with the lady of the house, and he goes to Fitz. He goes, hey, what happened? He goes, oh, something kind of unnatural. While I was out there, I can't really explain. He said, well, when you're riding, did you happen to see a black dog? He goes, oh, well, no, not really. Nothing at all. Even, you know, it was crazy. It was just, I don't know. He said that he fell into something, and his horse saw something spooked, and he fell into something, and he hurt himself. And one said, well, let's see your cut. The bandage is covering his face. So when he removes the rag, the slash is on Fitz's face, just where Wellington slashed the wolf. So right there, he doesn't see it. He just sees his man's hurt. But the witch and the other lady are standing at the door. They're like, oh, wait a minute now. And he's all, wait, I'll be back in a little bit, old chum. The ladies want to talk to me about something. They pull him off to the side, and they go, when did he come in? They go, right before you guys came in, he came in. He goes, something's not right about this. Do you see how that looks? You know, it happens to be right in the same slash where you cut at the beast. And, you know, this isn't a coincidence. Something's going on. And he's like, what do you mean? Your man might be that wolf, or might be some way connected to it. And he doesn't believe it. She goes, and the witch goes, well, there's only one way we can find this. Find out. A seance. And they go, seance? I don't believe it. That's ridiculous. They go, trust us. Let's see. Do it. Just see what happens, right? While Fitz is asleep, they sneak into his room with all the lady, the witch, the lady in the house. I forgot her name, the one that's helping, and Wellington. They go in, they surround them like in a perfect circle with the candles lit, and the witch just said, just follow my lead. As they go in the room, they hold like this circle, and it's kind of a dead giveaway. If you remember the cover, there's like they're holding hands, and then the wolf is coming out on them, so you're like, oh, it's this motherfucker, Fitz. Well, anyway, she starts some jibber jabber. You know, it's all like in a different language. That's the way it's supposed to be interpreted. Like she's talking like she's conjuring something up in this seance, right? They're holding hands as they're doing this. Just like electricity in the air. There's a little bit of fire starts to like ghostly fire. It's the best I can explain it, right? And as they're doing this, Wellington happens to open the eyes to see how Fitz is doing. And Fitz is there with his eyes closed, like he's sweating, laying in bed. And behind him, there's a shadow of the wolf hanging. Like, they have this motherfucker by the throat, and he just doesn't believe it. He gets so freaked out, he looks at his friends again, and Fitz wakes up in a panic. He's like, what's going on? What are you guys doing? And he's like, hey, there's something going on, friend. Just lay down. We'll try to explain. He goes, no, what's this black magic shit you guys are like? I'm not down with this. Like, what the fuck? He puts his clothes on, and he storms off. And she goes, see? If he's not the wolf himself, he's connected to a wolf. And Wellington's trying to wrap his head around. She's like, you know what? Let's all get a good night's rest. Let's figure shit out in the morning. Turn to the next panel. Everyone's having breakfast. They're wondering where the witch is. Next thing you know, there's a scream. Everyone runs out of the kitchen out to the pantry. And that's where we get a shocking surprise. And that, I'm going to leave for you to find out for yourself. Wellington number three. Yo, I'm loving this book, man. I'm fucking loving this fucking this book. So, I would definitely pick this up if you're already picking it up. I know you're liking it. My boy Phil, I know Phil, you're reading this. Who else? Keenan, you're reading this. My buddy Sammy's reading this. So, yo, I'm glad you guys like this, but don't sleep on this. Everyone else listening, don't sleep on this title. All right, here we go. What's next? Okay. This is a little bit of a spoiler. Even though the next two books are really fucking good, I'm going to just read off my book of the week. That's just how it's going to be. After the two books I got to read right now, I got Dark Knights, Death Metal number 1, and I got Upshot Comics, Archangel number 8, issue 2, which, of course, is the book of the fucking week. Now, if you remember the first issue, which was shit right before COVID hit, right? Too. This is, I remember all the books are starting to trickle out. So, it's about this assassin who has some kind of divinity or knows about gods and the angels. They might be involved, like on some Constantine shit, but more of a Narcos spin on it. You remember he got caught up. He shot his way out this fucking ambush. Some shit happened. And then at the end of that last page, you get this, I want to say Michael. They called him Michael or Gabriel. Which one of those Gabriel? There was this man sitting, like standing in the middle of this arsenal. And in the shadows, you could see these black wings. So you kind of know what you're getting into, but you kind of don't. Here we go. Book of the week, Archangel number 8. So, You're in the middle of this room. You start off where there's these three guys are talking about how you butcher, you know, what's the best way to cut meat, you know, what's the best thing to start doing it, what techniques. He has like this butcher blade out, and he's telling them, you know, me, I like using this. It's thick, it's sharp, it gets through bone, and when I want to get through bone, it's because one of you guys fucked up. He's talking to his man, a bunch of goons who I guess they dropped the ball on something, and that is killing the dude that they had trapped in a fucking single bed unit, and he happened to kill everyone but this guy leaving. He's all, you know what this is about. Don't even fuck around. Put your fucking hand on the table and let's do what's gotta be done, or I'm not gonna play with you. The guy, the surviving goon, bleeding, fucking crying, he's all, man, I'm sorry. We had this fucker. We don't know how we got it. He goes, that's just stop talking. Brings down this fucking butcher blade on this guy's pinky, takes it off, waving it around while the guy's fucking thriving. He's in agony on the floor. He gets a finger and he shoots it off to his Doberman pitcher. Right? We get the splash page, Archangel number 8. Written by Michael Morrissey, artist C.P. Smith. I'm fucking loving this dude. Colorist Snakebite Cortez. I like that fucking name, dude. All right, so now we're back with the female assassin who had her eyes on the target in that first issue and she had the shot but was told not to take it. She had my man's dead to rights, right? Well, we see her working on this bridge. She's coming up. Someone's talking to her. And she's like, hey, I'll be done in a couple minutes. Just make sure no one's bothering me. The panel, if you see it, there's this bridge that's connecting two parts of the land. This is some narco shit. You'll find out later. I didn't know what it was at first, but it connects maybe a part of America and a part of South America. And she's working on the bridge. She's like, it looks like she's doing like pull-ups on the bridge, right? But she's there working. When I say working, is she's setting fucking dynamites or bombs. As she's finished working, she's talking to whoever's in her ear. She says, yeah, you know, I didn't think it would take me this long. I just kind of enjoying the scenery. It's really nice out. As she's talking, two dudes on motorcycles roll up on her. She goes, give me a second. We might have a problem. And she goes, apparently some locals want to chat. And there's these two, like, hillbilly dudes, like, hey, what are you doing here by your lonesome, this and that. She starts talking to them, and then she mentions, hey, wait a minute. Do you guys work for Delmar, or don't you guys? And one of the guys takes off his helmet, looks at him, and goes, how the fuck do you know about that? She goes, she just smiles. She goes, what the fuck do you know about that? And then she smiles again. She goes, enough. They start racing towards her. They pull out guns. They start shooting. Or they start, before they start shooting, they race off towards her. You know, they got their dirt bikes. And she drops her whatever weapon she has, right? This is the cool part. She puts out her fucking finger, takes out this dude's fucking eyes. It's racing towards her. Ba-boom. He fucking falls off the side of the cliff. The other guy's like, what the fuck? You bitch. Starts heading towards her with the knife. She, in turn, gets the knife, breaks his arm, brings it back around, sticks that motherfucker in his neck. Both these motherfuckers done in under 10 seconds. This is a badass motherfucker, right? We cut back to our man who was there for two. He wanted to talk to that drug lord, to that Del Mar dude, but he don't see nobody. He thinks anybody's trying to see him either with feds, some kind of authority, something that he just don't want to waste time with. If he ain't there meeting you himself, then you're just a threat or someone he just didn't want to deal with, so he tried to kill him. So he gets to this address where Del Mar's supposed to be, walks in, and he finds a man there sitting there. And then he goes, hey, I know you're here for Del Mar, but his name's Carter. He goes, but I'm here instead, and I got this to tell you. Simple, and he's like, well, if Del Mar's not here, what are you going to do to stop me from killing you? He goes, simple, he just wants me to tell you the story. He's okay. Carter sits down and goes, I'm listening. He tells him what Del Mar wants to tell him. I'm going to let you guys read that for yourself. After Carter feels he's satisfied with what he's heard, he starts breaking away. He's all, well, I'm not going to kill you. He's like, nah, I figure you wouldn't anyways. You're not the one. If you were here to kill Del Mar, you wouldn't even have wasted your time with me. You just want to meet up with him, I guess. He goes, well, this is what he gave me. He goes, what is it? He goes, I don't know, just it's a surprise. The guy gives Carter this box. He opens it up, and there's one, two, three. There's about 20 something eyeballs in this box, all bloody. He looks at it, and on it is a passage from the Bible. And you look blind that you may see. Isaiah 42:18. Carter looks at the box, tosses it in disgust. It's a motherfucker. We go back to the bridge where that assassin chick had took out those two Del Mar goons, right? Now there's loaded people on each side. There's a van waiting on one side, waiting on the other van that's crossing. Carter's there. He knows something going on. He's there hiding in the woods as the narcos, that's what I'm going to say it is, fuck it, they come to see what's good, right? When they start talking about what happened to Del Mar's boy, the other guy's, well, they should have been here. Hey, we're here for business. Let's not worry about what happened to other people. Then they're like, well, how do we know who you're supposed to be? Well, he's like, well, you're going to have to take that chance. And one of them says, well, we don't take these kind of chances. And they start fucking unloading. This is the word narcos, man. They don't trust fucking people. Cardo's in the middle of all this. He sees all it going down and he steps out of the fucking shadows. He has his gun on the guy who's unloaded with like a semi-automatic. He goes, you okay? He goes, oh shit. He goes, don't move, because then you're dead. The guy tries to turn around. Carter smacks the fuck out of him. He passes out. He gets the other dude, or the guy he passes, he knocked out, picks him up, starts moving to the other guy. He's holding him as hostage, and he's telling him, nobody move. My aim isn't to kill you, but that could change in a heartbeat. I'm taking the drugs. No one follows me. When I'm gone, one of you is going to go back to Del Mar and tell him, and you're going to tell him. And right in the middle of that, because remember, all he wants is Del Mar's attention. He wants to have a sit-down with Del Mar. Why? I don't know. He's trying to warn him, I think, if I remember. So as he has this guy in front of him, he's telling him what they want him to do. The guy's head fucking explodes. There's a shot that comes from the woods. We all know who it is. You're reading the book. She's on it, right? And then she gets a call from Aaron. She's like, why are you wasting your time? Do what you got to do. She's like, okay. You see a countdown. 3, 2. And Carter hears that. He goes, fuck, I know that sound. He starts to jump out the way the bridge blows up, right? In the middle of the fucking chaos, everybody looks like they're dead. The bridge is fucking gone. There's only parts hanging on either end. You get Carter crawling out of the carnage, and he's walking up, and then someone from the back says, Roselle. Carter turns around, he looks, he goes, so it is you. Now, this is a Punisher-looking motherfucker times 10, right? And he's saying, huh. Gabriel's still sending you to do his dirty deeds. So now, I've heard the name Roselle before in other comics and folklore. And I don't know if it's in the Bible, I don't remember. But he's one of the angels, or one of the lost angels. I think he's one of Lucifer's lost angels. One of the angels that fell with them, right? And he gets up, he goes, no one calls me by that name, Michael. Not anymore. Now he calls him Michael. This is the guy we see at the end of the first fucking book at that in that splash page with the wings. I'm thinking this is the Archangel Michael. Why, right? What are they doing on Earth with this fucking heavy artillery taking out narcos or stealing from narcos? I have no idea. But I'm loving it so fucking far. And he says, well, excuse me, I forgot to reduce you to a number. Does it bother you being reminded? Doesn't it bother you being reminded of what you used to be? There he goes, hinting at what his past is. And he goes, you know why I'm here, and now you got me, so if you're going to do it, kill me already. And he goes, why? Why would I want to kill you? Funny thing is that to kill someone just because that's what you were told to do doesn't seem right to me. He goes, let me ask you something. Have you ever considered why Gabriel would want to kill one of his own? That right there puts me on game like, all right, these are fucking former angels, right? Or fallen angels. And Roselle looks at Gabriel and goes, no, never consider it. He's like, well, you might want to think about that. They have a little back and forth where a couple of spoilers are dropped. I'm going to let the reader fucking read this, you know. And he goes, just remember one last thing. When was the last time you had that? When was the last time you had it, Roselle? He goes, what? Had what? He goes, a fucking choice. Roselle's done listening. He throws his knife towards Gabriel's throat. Gabriel catches it like with the split two finger. Looks fucking dope. He goes, well, I thought better of you. And at that, he goes, no, D, don't do it. Because the assassin lady's on Roselle with these fucking... We knew him as Carter. Now we know him as Roselle with the quickness. Like, the laser's on this motherfucker getting ready to take him out. She goes, no, let him go. Roselle jumps off the bridge, lands in the water. Gabriel and D take off and says, huh, we did what we came here to do. The seeds have been planted. He smiles, walks away as Roselle looks on from the water. He goes, let's see what they can grow. That's the end of that book. Oh, Archangel number 8, man. Yo, from Upshot. This is a motherfucking book you have to be reading, man. This is some shit. This is street level shit. And with a little supernatural twist, it looks like, right? But they fucking got me. They had me with issue 1. Now I'm like in. Book of the fucking week. All right. Now, even though I'm going to read this last book, I really fucking enjoyed it. It was up there for book of the week, and then I read Archangel number 8, right? Shit happens. This is DC's Dark Knight Death Metal number 1. Now, if you remember when they came out with the DC Dark Knight shit, that I got just the main books, you know, where the Dark Universe book where Batman as Green Lantern, Batman as Superman, Batman as Joker, which is the Batman who laughs, right? I got all those one-shots. I got the first issue of the main story, and then when they formed, there was a part in the book where they formed like a Voltron. I think I talked about this on like episode 1, and it fucking lost me. I was done. I was like, no, these superheroes don't build a fucking Voltron. Get the fuck out of here with that nonsense, right? But because I've been hearing a lot of buzz about this, I'm like, let me jump into this and see what it's like. There's about four different variant covers. Me being a big fan of David Finch, I got the Capullo one was pretty dope, but I got the David Finch number 1. We get this Sergeant Rock, I think, right? He's talking to somebody, telling them, you know, the rules of war, what happened to him and his people. Then we get a panel of someone using the buzzsaw, and we get Wonder Woman. She's using the buzzsaw to cut some. We don't see what it's for. And then you hear someone say, Wonder Woman. She's still cutting away with the butt with its chain, right? She goes, again, Wonder Woman. Diana, I bring news. She takes off her glasses. She stops. She goes, well, is it bad or is it worse? And the person tells her it's Swamp Thing. It's like a depleted looking fuck. Like if Swamp Thing been smoking crack for 20 years. This is the fucking thing we get. Looks pretty fucking cool, man. He's like, he's coming, Diana. And he's bringing a prisoner. So he's okay. She's okay. She puts her tools away. She starts walking away. When she walks away to what she was trying to cut down, we see the invisible jet, which is Wonder Woman's invisible jet. Everybody knows what that is, right? We get her and Swamp Thing walking through, like, best I can explain it, like, underground jail. And you see all these supervillains tied up. You see, like, Captain Cold. You see the Riddler. They're trying to talk, get her attention. She keeps walking by Swamp Thing. Then we see the Joker. He starts saying something, and Swamp Thing responds, and that's when Joker just goes and makes a laugh. And he's like, huh, That's hilarious. Like I said, I'm not going to get too much of the spoilers with this because you need to read this shit. I recommend. If it wasn't for Archangel number 8, this would have probably been Book of the Week, right? She walks up to the entrance and she sees a dinosaur with like the bat signal on his face. And two different looking Batman, and they got somebody tied up, like under rope. You don't know who it is. And she tells them, you know, the one of the Batman said, Dana, you took your time. And she goes, well, I was busy disposing of my old jet on your master's orders. You know, he's a hunt, the invisible jet. It's crazy to see that thing go. Anyways, they start talking, and she's like, well, we brought, one of the Batman says, well, we brought you in a prisoner. He has to go straight into the pit, not in the cell. He's going to the pit. She goes, a pit? Like, why the hell, who the hell is this supposed to be? You know, why are we taking our time taking him to the pit? And he's like, it doesn't matter. And then she replies, well, what matters? That's when you get this fucking T-Rex get in her face and yell at her, do as you're told, or it'll be your sister screaming in the pits. And then Diana tells this dinosaur, you know, remember, speak of my sisters again, reptile, you know, just remember, she goes, reptile, the dinosaur goes, the T-Rex goes, I'm not reptile, I am Batman, same as the others on my world. She goes, just remember, Bruce uploaded his consciousness into this robot dinosaur in the last minute before he passed or did whatever, lost his sanity. Doesn't make you a real Batman, she goes. And the dinosaur, the T-Rex replies back, yes, it does. They have a little bit back and forth. She gets the prisoner. They start walking away. As they walk away, the prisoner looks at Wonder Woman and says, Diana, remember, like in a whisper. Diana looks closely. She sees a face under the hood and yells out, it's you. It can't be, but you're. And then one of the Batman stops her talk. You were saying to them. She stays quiet. Now, you get this monologuing by the man, the ruler of this part of the universe, which is the Batman Who Laughs. You get the splash page of his rules or the things you got to be living by, right? How he controls and rules this world is something I'll let you find out on your own. But you get these images of the evil Robins. I'm pretty sure all you guys seen these fucking, they're like goblin Robins, right? Roblins, they call them Roblins. I should trademark that. I don't know if anyone's saying it. But anyways, they look fucking cool, man, right? You've seen them in they first appear in the Batman Who Laughs. And then they're about in the city. And then we go to a part where they're on, like, at a park. And the Batman Who Laughs, who's a ruler of this dimension, brings up all his lieutenants. One of them being Harley Quinn. And she's walking around with a big-ass, like, a fucking hyena that's bigger than everybody else, right? Like a fucking elephant and shit, but it's a hyena. It looks crazy. And this Harley Quinn, I love the way she looks in this. Short hair, the white face, but like the spades on the eyes kind of thing. She looks pretty fucking cool, right? In a red and black outfit. That's one of the lieutenants. The other one is, she's known as the Hunter of the Wastelands. Then Dr. Arkham is there. He's there with, like, these big old fucking man bats that are fucking huge. Then we get Aquaman, commander of the Black Fleet, and the Baphomet, which is like this crazy looking monster, right? And then after that, we get Diana, queen of the underworld, Bat Mage, who was the guy who was with her, and her guardian, Swamp Thing, Mr. Miracle, guardian of the new apocalypse, Dark Father, and then we get Superman, who's working on, he's off world, but he gets to tune in. And now I always thought there was only three Robins, right? Because you get I think he killed Dick, but you get Damian, you get Jason Todd, and you get Tim Drake. But in this panel where we're looking at him talk to his lieutenant, there's like five or six Robins roaming around. And this is something crazy. I didn't read the other books. I know that they're like the way they are, right? They obey on command. Not only that, they'll protect the Batman Who Laughs at all fucking costs, even if it means their own lives. They get into talking about what the world used to be and what he expects and how they've been taking over other worlds. At that moment, there's a shout from beyond the trees. And not only that, with the shout and warning comes of like missile heading towards the Batman Who Laughs. All he says is children, ground crow, or crow crow. All the Robins built, like, they all get together and shoot up towards where the missile was, right in front of the Batman Who Laughs to protect them. A couple of them die, or they take the hit, right? And he looks beyond the floor like, who could have done that? And there's Bruce. From what world? I don't know yet. That's the interesting part about this. He sends his people to go hunt him down. But Batman's not there alone. Once they're when I say his people, you like everybody on this world are either Batman or some form of Batman. Like the demon Etrigan, he has like the cowl on, but he's still a demon. What's his dude? Elongated Man, I think. Scarecrow. They're all different versions of Batman. He's control of this whole army. He sicks them. He sends them to go kill Bruce. And they go, well, he's not running. I'm surprised. You're going to die. He goes, well, no. He goes, I'm not here alone. You know, all I really need is just one word to help me. He says, rise. As he says this, he has a Black Lantern ring. The Black Lanterns, if you guys remember, they control the dead or the army of the dead. And right before those villain turned Batman looking things attack, these zombies crawled out from this land. So I'll give you a little bit of context about this horde that's coming out to protect Bruce because he wields that ring. A long time ago, there was a battle here between like famous Waynes, other generals and stuff. They died fighting, protecting this land. A lot of them were Bruce's forefathers, like his family from way back. So when he rides them, they're there to protect them. There's a big old fucking rumble with these. And then he's talking to someone inside. We don't see who it is yet, and it's Jonah Hex. And he's all, do what you got to do. Take care of what you got to take care of. I got to go find Diana. And as he heads off, Diana can't believe Bruce is still alive. I guess he wasn't supposed to be. And that's when we get a shot of deep, deep space. There's somebody looking at a compass. He's all, well, almost there. Didn't think I'd find you. And then we get a shot of Lobo looking fucking glorious. You know, Capullo on the art, man, right? We turn to one of the next chapters. I guess they're broken down in chapters. This is the Power Chords. The first one, I don't remember what it's called. The one I just ran down with Batman attacking the Batman left was called Deadbeats. And so now we're in the fourth or the third chapter of this. We get Diana back down in her lair, and she's thinking about something, and then she goes, enough, I've had enough. Swamp Thing comes out and starts warning her about the problems she can have if she does what she's going to do. He knows her. He's been around her for a year. She goes, I have to. I can't just stand around. He's like, well, I'll protect you the best I could. And she's all, that's all I ask. Thank you, old friend. She dives down to the pit, and the figure that the Batman brought there and robes is standing there in the coat. He goes, I expected fire and brimstone, but and I totally forgot that the ninth level of hell is a cold wasteland. Diana gets closer, and she looks. She goes, is it you? Is it really you? She pulls her head back. She goes, Wally West. As the shroud goes back, she goes, yes, it's me, Diana, or what's left of me. She gives him a big hug. She goes, well, you can change things. You have the power to change things. And he starts telling her, well, I did have power, but this is what happened. Then you get the backstory about all the shit that happened on the crisis on Infinite Earth, the thing with the monolith, the Green Lanterns attacking Darkseid, and whatever he was involved with, all the dark Batman from the Dark Universe, and of course Dr. Manhattan. So it brings this up and why all this matters, and now they're talking, they're starting to form a plan, and right in the middle of the talk, a voice comes from behind them, and it's a Batman who laughs, and he tells them, you didn't think I would know that you were going to be the first one to betray me. And as he starts monologuing, Wonder Woman's just listening, trying to think of ways to get out. And she's all, you have nothing that can stop me. There's nothing you can make, no kind of shield, no kind of weapon. You're doomed, you know, just take it as it is. She goes, well, you made a mistake. You always thought I had some kind of shield or sword, you know, maybe it's something else. Maybe I made something else when I destroyed my jet. She pulls on a string, vroom, something comes alive and cuts straight into the chest of this motherfucker. The Chainsaw of Truth is born. After that, we get one of the Batmen running off, letting the Robins, or the Goblins, I'm going to call them, letting them know that their man is in trouble and needs help. They run to a room where it's like a sealed door, and the only button to the door is a frowning, like it's supposed to be a happy face, but it's a frowny face. And I'm like, well, that looks familiar. They open up the door. Dr. Manhattan is waiting on the other side. Whew. We turn the panel where we get Bruce at the end trying to get the soldier we met at the beginning, telling him what's going on, what the plan is, and the soldier telling him, well, if you think there's a chance, we'll fight. And that's how the book ends. Some very interesting shit going on in this book, man. Very interesting shit. If you're a fan of the Dark Knight shit, you're already probably picking this up. I gave it a shot just because it looked cool. I'm actually happy with this first issue, so I'm gonna stick to the main story. I know it's gonna break off into fucking 13 other books. I'm not doing all that bullshit. I'm gonna stick to the main story. Whatever else I need to fill in the gaps, I'll find on my own and just go from there. All right, so let me do some quick hits. Okay, so Batman 92, Pawns of the Designer. It's pretty much ending the chapter or tying into the Joker War, but we get to know what the designer's true plans in. So if you're a fan of that, keep reading that. Batman the Adventure Continues, number one, which came out. Now, if you're a fan of Batman the Anime Series, this book actually takes place or starts right where the show ended. So it's like a continuation. There's about three variants. I got like the old school looking one with like a red cover, all the villains on it. It's fucking dope. Who did this? I forgot who did the fucking art on the cover here. But Paul Dini actually does. He's an animator and he did the art, the original art for the Batman anime series. Is the actual artist for this book. I think Jim Burnett's the one who's writing this. It's an absolute recommend if you're a fan of those. I've already seen what issue 2 and 3 are going to look like. Just the covers alone look amazing. Just something you want to collect. I enjoyed it because I was a fan of the show. So it just takes off where it left off. So it's pretty cool. Now, a quick hit on Joker 80th anniversary book. This book's just like all the 80th anniversaries. If you picked up the Robin one, the Superman, Wonder Woman, I think Green Lantern just had his, Flash, Robin, which is one I picked up a couple weeks ago, I think, and I talked about it a little bit. It's just pretty much like an annual, right? You guys remember annuals back in the day? Or a one-shot, 100-page super one-shot spectacular, right? That's what they're calling this. And you get all these tales from the Clown Prince of Crime. There's some pretty cool stories in there. There's one where Joker actually kills Batman, doesn't know what to do with his life, so he gets a regular job. It's fucking hilarious. It's him. I don't want to tell you if it's an Elseworld thing or if he's imagining it. Just I'll let you read it and find out. It's a pretty cool story. There is one story in here that ties into the rest, though. This is why this book is important too. You get the origin of what's her name? Punchline, his new girlfriend, his new sidekick, whatever you want to call her. Her origin is actually in this book, which we didn't know was going to happen. You had to read the book or heard the buzz afterwards, and then people went out and got their copy, right? So if you already got it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, pick it up for just that. I'm pretty sure it's going to have some value later on if you're going to pick it up for that. But there's about 9 variants. I got about 3 of them. The Capullo one fucking got me. Then you got the 70s Joker, the 80s Joker, the 60s, so on and so forth, right? This is the one I love. So I this is the main one. The other one I'll put away. But pick the book up if you're a fan of Batman and his villains, especially the Joker. I recommend it. All right, I fucking did it. I reviewed, 5 books, quick hit 3. Shit, that was a lot of fucking work, man. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I hope you've been enjoying them. I hope you've been enjoying the recommendations I'm shooting your way. Yo, I'm telling you, even with these small press books, give them a fucking shot, man. Do the 3-issue rule, right? Give it 3 issues if you're not hung, if you're not stuck by, or if you're not invested by then, let the book go. What is that? $9 at the most, right? But the books I recommend are ones you should be picking up. Like really, when have I let you down? Tell me. All I can say is thank you for listening. And until the next show, Serious Nerd, I'm out. Oh, wait a minute. I got to put this in there. Before I'm out, you can find me on Instagram under @yo_MrBigGeek. You can also listen to me on RLU Weekly, which is on Raw Live Unedited. And you can also find me, my other show, RLU After Dark, which is an adult-themed show. All you kids listening, do not turn into that. Get your parents No, I don't get your parents' permission. Let them motherfuckers listen to it. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know it's all over the place. But, hey, pick up these goddamn books. You know I'm right. See you guys next time. Cheers, nerd. Out.
One by one, hidden up my sleeve. Hey, don't let it go to waste. I love it, but I hate my taste. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream of the day when it comes around and it's still.